Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The Amazon is aflame. The largest tropical rainforest on the planet is on fire. This at a time when global warming has reached peaks that, well, are unheard of in certainly written, recorded history, and it's making things worse. So this hour, I want to explore what's happening, why it's happening, and how it affects us, and most importantly, what we can do about it. And to answer some of these questions, I've got a really special guest in studio with me today. His name is Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali. You can wave at people, folks, watching on Facebook. By the way, if you want to watch on Facebook, just go to Mark Levine Talk, and you can watch this show if you're listening on the radio and you happen to be near a computer. Dr. Ali is the Vice President of the National Wildlife Federation. He's also an ex-aide, I guess, staffer from the Judiciary Committee, which warms my heart. He worked for the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, John Conyers, a few years after I worked for number two on the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman Barney Frank. So he and I know a lot of the same people. But we're going to put that aside, right. Dr. Ali, and we're going to focus on what's going on in the Amazon. Before I even get there, though, all my listeners know that climate change is real, that the global warming is dangerous. But give us an idea, just apart from Brazil, how bad is it worldwide right now in August of 2019?
I mean, it's amazing to see some of the things that are going on across the planet. In places sometimes that there are not conversations, in Russia, Siberia, you know, you've got permafrost that is melting and there are fires that are raging through the area. There are huge, huge fires that are there. When you look at the Arctic, you know, there are trillions of tons of ice that is melting. And therefore affecting the, you know, temperatures in the sea, in the oceans, but also changing our atmosphere, changing our weather patterns that are going on across our country. We've seen, you know, we used to talk about 50-year floods, and on occasion we would talk about 100-year floods. Now the norm is becoming 500-year floods that we saw throughout the Midwest. We've seen the fires out in our country in the West and in the Pacific Northwest. And we also see how this is now also starting to affect the pollution and the impacts on communities across just in our country. There's literally no place you can go across our planet where there are not wildfires, intense hurricanes and typhoons, droughts. I just came back recently from Africa and having conversations with people about some of the extreme droughts that are happening there, happening in the Middle East, happening in so many different locations. You really can't go anywhere without seeing the impacts of climate change and, of course, their connection to fossil fuels.
So I know that the Arctic ice, which scares a lot of us because it's sort of the easiest to see, the easiest to track. I've seen those maps. You know, it used to be the entire Arctic. There used to be no Northwest Passage. You didn't used to be able to go around the northern part of Canada and Alaska. You can now. I believe, is it fair to say that the summer of 2019, the Arctic ice pack is the smallest we've ever seen?
It is the smallest we've ever seen. And this is, you know, beginning to build toward us having the hottest year ever recorded on the planet in many, many locations across the country. And folks should really be concerned about that because it has huge impacts. It has economic impacts. It has health impacts. And of course, it has the long-term impacts of our planet and how that will play out and lots of decisions that people will have to make and tough choices.
Now, of course, the Arctic, scientists will tell you, because it's ice floating on water, it actually, when it melts in the Arctic, even though we can see that, it displaces the same amount of water. It doesn't actually raise sea level. But when ice melts from Greenland, from Siberia, from Antarctica, from land masses and runs into the sea, that actually increases the sea level. So I understand that Greenland's melting. Maybe that's why Donald Trump wants to buy it from Denmark, even though they're not interested in selling. I don't know. Maybe he wants to put some beachfront property there. And it's hard for me to ever know what goes on in that man's head. But despite the easy mockery of that idea, the crisis in Greenland is real, isn't it? I mean, huge ancient ice packs are slipping from Greenland into the ocean, raising our sea level.
That's a problem, as well as folks sometimes forget, as we start to lose this ice, it has a reflective capability. So as the sun makes its way to our planet, when you have darker surfaces, then it captures that and helps to heat up everything. When you have the ice packs in place, then it helps to reflect that back into space. So when we have these situations where we're losing this ice, when we're losing this protective layer, if you will, then it really creates this scenario for the warming of the planet.
Now, the ice goes away in the summer. Mm-hmm. It does come back to some extent in the winter. Mm-hmm. Why is the new ice less permanent, say, than the old ice?
It's not as thick. And then also, just because our temperatures continue to be warmer and warmer. We had temperatures in Alaska of 90 degrees. The day that it was 90 degrees in Alaska, it was 89 degrees in Miami. That should give people concern, because that is becoming the new norm, where we have these locations across the planet where you'll have 40 or 50 degrees warmer temperature on certain days than would be the norm. And that's becoming, you know, more and more often. So we have to be really, really concerned with the choices that we've been making and how they are beginning to play out, not only in far off locations, but also here in our country.
So the sea level rises.
Yep.
Increased flooding, increased hurricanes, mm-hmm. increased tornadoes. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have beachfront property and you're just trying to make ends meet.
Yep.
Why should you be concerned?
Well,
I mean, it sounds awful, but you know, maybe that'll happen 10, 20, 30 years from now. And if you live in the Shenandoah Valley and far from the ocean in Virginia, why should you care?
Well, you should care for a number of other reasons also. One is the floods that we talked about. Two is the droughts that are happening or changes to land patterns. If you're somebody who enjoys the outdoors, we're losing, you know, a significant amount of species.
We lose biodiversity.
We do.
Species actually are going extinct because they don't live exactly in the habitats that they're used to.
Yes, yes. There's some migration that's going on, and others are sort of anchored to where they are, so you lose those. There was a report that came out a couple of months ago that said that over the next couple of decades, we may lose close to 1 million species.
It's not just the polar bear.
It's not.
I feel
just
bad
polar
for
bears.
The polar bear.
Yeah, no, but, you know, polar bears are cool, but at the same time, you know, it is those things that you may actually see that your children or your children's children may never get a chance to. And that's why, you know, if you're an outdoor enthusiast, there are these changes that are happening. If you are someone, you know, I grew up as a hunter and a fisherman, and, you know, in many locations now, certain things are going to be disappearing. You know, salmon in certain locations in Alaska are threatened now. But, you know, if you're a trout fisherman, if you start to have, you
I
know,
like salmon and trout.
Well, there you go.
You're killing me here.
There you go. You have this water that warms up. They can no longer survive in certain locations.
We can't get rid of Brussels sprouts instead.
You might be able to.
Sorry,
but there's probably an association for Brussels sprouts.
There probably
that would be
is. I apologize for that. Let me go to the Amazon, because all we really know here is there are these massive raging fires out of control. Before I get to the details of exactly what's going on in Brazil, tell me how these fires contribute to global warming.
Oh, my goodness. So as the fires in Brazil are just out of control, what's happening here is that there is a huge amount of pollution that's going into the air. But there's
carbon pollution.
Carbon pollution. But also, as these trees begin to die in the Amazon rainforest, you're going to have a carbon explosion, if you will. I often talk about a climate time bomb that is actually beginning to go off now. And what that means is these locations that are carbon sinks. And what that means for folks is that the trees that we look outside
of. There's a ton
of
carbon
window,
in trees.
Exactly. And other sort of forestation and other plants that are there. But trees primarily.
Mm-hmm.
They hold it. They capture it. But they also create oxygen for us. So when you look at a place like the Amazon rainforest, it creates 20% of our oxygen on our planet.
On the entire planet.
On the entire planet.
Middle of the Pacific Ocean, that's
exactly.
20% coming from
exactly.
the Amazon rainforest,
yeah.
which is the largest on the planet.
It is.
Now, you were telling me before the break, the second largest is
in the Congo.
Yeah. But My guess is that's an order of magnitude smaller.
It is.
You probably fit two or three Congos in the Amazon.
Exactly. You're pretty close with the numbers there. That's exactly right.
So it's not like if we lose the Amazon, we can just rely on the Congo. We're losing three Congos here. And now, the rainforest is a place of relatively little. You don't see many cities. You don't see many roads. This is. The irony is that climate change, which is caused by people living in urban environments, is largely destroying the last places of wilderness on the planet, whether we're talking about Greenland or we're talking about Brazil. There's dense forests full of all kinds of life, and frankly, human life is probably the least numbers in terms of numbers. But there are people who live in the rainforest and have lived there for millennia, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, there are, of course, our indigenous brothers and sisters who live there, who have been there for thousands and thousands of years. There's
subsistence, hunting, fishing, gathering. They're not the ones causing the fire.
Right, very small imprint on the environment themselves. They live in a very sustainable way because many of their cultural practices are of such that they honor. They honor everything from the trees to the water to the fish that's in the water. Everything is seen as being connected to them. So they don't do anything to abuse it, if that makes sense.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to know who is abusing it, who is causing the fires, why they're causing them, how much of this is human intervention, how much of it is just unlucky accident. And we'll get into some of the politics of Brazil right here on the Inside Scoop. We'll be right back right after this. If you want to call in, though, feel free to ask your question, 888-653-7543. Right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. The voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Dr. Mustafa Ali. Dr. Ali is an expert on the Amazon and climate change. He's vice president in the National Wildlife Federation. And we were talking about what was going on in Brazil. So the indigenous people aren't causing the fires. Mm-hmm. Who's causing the fires? Is just lightning striking in the forest and it's spreading, or is this purposeful?
Well, you know, there are a couple of different dynamics there we should unpack for folks. One is very similar to the dynamic we have going on in our country when you have leadership. And when I say leadership, I'm talking about the president of Brazil creating an atmosphere of saying that the Amazon is a resource that we should be exploiting, that we should be clear-cutting, which, of course, leads to deforestation, so that we can have more agriculture, so that there can be more cattle farming, so that we can open it up to mining, then you are sending a signal to others that it is okay for you to do slash and burn.
Now, Brazil is a very large country. It's as big as the continental 48 United States. Can't they do farming and agriculture the Amazon is, I don't know, a third of Brazil, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, they got two-thirds of the country. Don't they have enough agriculture? I mean, I eat Brazilian steaks
yes,
and all.
Yes, yes. I mean, Brazil is one of the breadbaskets of the planet, if you will. Mm-hmm. And many folks are focusing on sustainable business practices, sustainable agricultural practices. There's actually a big initiative around that to get more folks pulled into that. But what you do have is you have some small farmers who do some slash and burn. That's been going on for quite a while. But now you have the big agricultural companies who help to support the current president to get his position, who have said we want more.
And when you say clear cutting,
yes,
they're not. I mean, just cutting down trees and logging them, as bad as that may be, they're actually purposely burning the forest.
Yes,
because that removes trees faster.
It does.
Are they getting rid of some really good wood there, good timber? Even in pure economics, why wouldn't they cut it down rather than burn it down?
So it wasn't as significant of a problem when it was in a small scale. But now when you have these larger entities who are moving into the space, what we found is that this year we've had over 75,000 fires started, not from lightning strikes, but intentionality. And that is an 80% increase since the new president has come into office. So just like President Trump sends a signal around environmental issues, around climate issues, that one, you know, he says climate change isn't real. He's like, you can exploit public lands, and we can talk about the various places in this country that that's been going on. You're getting the exact same type of a paradigm shift in Brazil. And when you have now these incredible amounts of fires that are going on, they are now spreading at an alarming rate. And literally thousands of miles away in places like São Paulo, they literally had days when there was so much smoke in the sky that it blocked out the sun.
Now, São Paulo is quite a distance
from
the Amazon rainforest. It's I don't know, a couple days drive, maybe?
It's a huge amount.
I mean, that's like New York to St. Louis or something?
That shares with you sort of the size and intensity of the fires that are still going on. You know, the president called up 44,000 members of the army to get engaged and to begin to help to fight this. Now, let's be very clear that he was very slow in making that movement, and that was intentional based upon my estimation.
So basically, agribusinesses.
Not just agribusinesses.
Who's burning the trees?
So you have mining.
Okay.
So there are mining companies. There are cattle ranching companies, and there are also the agricultural aspects that are there. And there probably are a couple of others, but those are the major ones that are seeking more and more land. And the president ran on a platform of opening that up. He ran on a platform, a racist platform, of trying to get rid of the indigenous people who are there, who have a tie to the land.
Now, the indigenous people of Brazil are a relatively small population.
They are a small population.
I don't think they're much larger than our own indigenous peoples in the United States, Americans.
That's 2-3%. Yeah, many of them have been killed over the years.
Sure.
People should know also, sometimes we don't have the fullness of the conversation about these issues. And in 2017, there were over 57 environmental leaders, activists who were murdered in Brazil, the most across the planet. That year, there were about 150-something across the planet. Brazil had the most that was going on. Recently, one of the indigenous leaders who had been pushing back against the demarcation of their lands, the taking of their lands, was murdered. He was found stabbed, I forget, it was like 50 or 60 times. And the president said that maybe it was just an accident, that what was being reported wasn't
Sounds
true.
Sounds like some of Vladimir Putin's excuses.
Well, yeah, that may be true as well.
But so what I want to explore, and we got to take another break in a second, but I want to explore who this President Bolsonaro is, mm-hmm. how he got in power, and mm-hmm. actually delve into a little bit of Brazil's system. I mean, mm-hmm. is it a democracy? Is it not really a democracy? Mm-hmm. Is it a troubled democracy? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not really a dictatorship, but I don't know that I'd call it a democracy either. I want to understand what were the forces that brought him to power, mm-hmm. and basically what Brazilians think about him. Do they like this? Are they willing to suffer the loss of the Amazon? So I got lots of questions for you when we come back. Mm-hmm. Also, I encourage you folks to join in the conversation. It's easy to do. Just pick up the phone and dial 888-653-7543. 888-653-7543. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Progressive.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Dr. Mustafa Ali. He is the president of the National Wildlife Federation and, the vice president.
We have a great president.
I apologize. The vice president of the National Wildlife Federation. His focus is on environmental justice, climate, and community revitalization. We're talking, of course, about the devastation in the Amazon. So let's drill down. The president mm-hmm. is Bolsonaro.
Yep.
He's been in office a year.
Mm-hmm.
And how do Brazilians have elections? Are they fair?
They do.
Are they fairer than ours? Because ours, you know,
our
candidate won by 3 million votes, and she didn't get to be president. So
exactly.
Explain to me how Brazilian democracy works.
Sure, there is a democratic process. You know, over the years, there's been military rule in the past, and then there was sort of this quasi-government that was around for a while, and now there's a democracy that's there.
A popular vote.
Popular vote.
So Bolsonaro was elected by the majority.
Yeah, but you have to remember, so there are a couple different dynamics. The economy was having some challenges that was going on, and then the previous president also had...
It was corrupt.
There were some corruption charges, and there was an impeachment that was a part of the process that was there. And there were promises. So
What did Bolsonaro promise?
Well, Bolsonaro said that he was going to help to, you know, bolster the economy, to create jobs, to have Brazil first, but at the same time to build partnerships with others across
so
the planet.
Brazil first. Is he anti-immigrant like Trump?
The best way to say it is it depends where those immigrants are coming from.
Well, that's even worse. That is like Donald Trump, since he doesn't seem to have a problem with Slovenia. He just has a problem with Guatemala. Yeah. Of course, Brazil, a lot of people don't know this, has a long history of it's actually interesting to compare, say, Brazilian slavery with American slavery, because Brazil has a long history of Africans living in Brazil, mm-hmm. but blacks and whites had slaves that were black and white. Mm-hmm. Am I right about that? It had slavery, but it wasn't racially based the way it was in America.
Folks say that, but we'll quickly break that down. Yes.
So there was some racism, not as bad as in Virginia, but. Well, maybe you can tell me.
More slaves died in Brazil. The average life of a slave in Brazil was 7 years.
So it's brutal.
Brutal.
But wasn't necessarily race-based.
I don't know if I would necessarily say that. So let's say this. So slavery lasted longer in Brazil than any other place in the northern or North American hemisphere, if you will, or the Americas.
In the Americas. Yeah.
1888 is when slavery stopped officially in Brazil. The majority of slaves that came into Brazil were men, and there was a small amount of women.
And they were mostly from Africa.
They were from Africa. And what you found was that the Portuguese, the men who were there, many of them, because there weren't a lot of Portuguese women who were over, they had relationships with both the Amerindians and the African slaves who were there.
So there's a much more mixed
racial
population.
There was a very much more mixed, yes.
Population.
Now, I would say that racism still exists in Brazil to a degree, because if you look on TV, you will very rarely see someone with strong African features being prominently displayed. If you look in business and you look at the leadership that's there, you also will be hard-pressed to find folks who look like myself.
Well, and if you don't mind sharing, you're part Brazilian, right?
I have some Brazilian heritage.
Right. So it's a little off topic, but how would you compare race relations in Brazil versus those in the United States? How are they the same? How are they different?
Well, there over a number of years recently, there is an awakening of the diaspora. Most folks should know that in Brazil is the largest African population outside of Nigeria, I believe.
Outside of Africa.
Yes. But inside of Africa, of course, are countries
and
you know, the populations that exist there. Brazil has the second largest in the world. And the culture is still there. And there's this reawakening that's happening where people are beginning to embrace their blackness, if we want to say it that way. But racism does exist. It exists in different ways.
Did Bolsonaro have a racist campaign?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so tell me about that.
But his, of course, you know, African folks of the diaspora or descendants are a part of that. But he was very clear of what he was going to do to indigenous people. He was very clear that he was going to.
So he was joining blacks and whites against the natives, basically.
There's always that game that people play, trying to separate each other and put one group against the other. But he was very focused on, I feel, the extermination of the indigenous population that's there, so that the resources could be more readily accessed.
He wanted their land.
He wanted their land.
And the Amazon may be a third of Brazil, and the irony is there aren't that many indigenous people there. It's mostly trees and plants and animals.
And folks are not honoring some of those treaties, if you want to label it that way, those commitments.
So it kind of sounds like the United States 100, 150 years ago, basically, when we were kind of conquering the West and taking out Native American populations.
And some would say even to today, when we saw what happened in Standing Rock, when we see, if you've ever spent any time on reservations and you see the abject poverty that is there, not poverty in a sense of culture, the culture is strong, but when you look at where we are investing and how we are honoring those agreements, then you do see a disconnect that is there.
But of course, Native Americans in the United States really can't practice their traditional lifestyle. It's very, very hard to do. I mean, there's no buffalo roaming the plains. A lot of that is just wiped out. Whereas in Brazil, people still can practice their heritage of thousands of years, at least for now.
Yes.
But Bolsonaro is trying to get rid of that.
Bolsonaro, some leaders, not all, some are trying to do the right thing, but some who are in business and industry, you know, there are the hiring of mercenaries moving into some of these areas to take people out. There is the arming of some of the mining folks to take people out if they are pushing back and standing against this development that people feel is necessary.
Who owns title to the land? Does the government own title to the land? I mean, I realize that the people should own title to the land, but that's not always the way the law works.
Yeah.
What is the Amazon owned by the Brazilian government for a large part?
You know, that is an interesting dynamic, and there are those who are much more well-versed than myself in that. There are some of the indigenous communities that have title to the land, and then there are some, because of movements around, that is not necessarily the case. And then when you talk about some of the former African slaves who live in the rainforest also may not have title, but they have been there for hundreds of years. So you have that dynamic that goes on. It's not that different than here in our country when we see some of these major climatic events, you know, the hurricanes come through, the floods, and some African-American communities' homes have been passed down from generation to generation without there being a deeded land, and then they have to struggle in that space. And you find it also with some of the other smaller groups in our country.
So the burning started largely purposefully to clear cut areas of the forest, but they didn't really intend to burn the whole Amazon down.
I don't personally think anyone wants to burn the whole thing.
Did it get out of control?
It has gotten out of control. It's gotten out of control, I think, because one, there was that policy from the president that was supportive of that. There was also the folks in business and industry who also supported and pushed those who are trying to do some clear cutting to do more and more and more.
So tell me the scope of the devastation. I mean, you can't even get a helicopter over the whole thing. It's too big.
They're still trying to evaluate exactly how much, because now the problem is that it's not just Brazil. You have the fires that have now moved over toward Bolivia and moved to some of the other surrounding countries who are doing what they can now to help to put that out. And that's why you had the folks from the G7 who actually offered, I believe it was $20 million,
which seems like a pittance, frankly.
It was a small amount, but it was at least saying that we are aware and that we want to be supportive. And, of course, the president said that Brazil is an independent entity.
He refused the money.
He did. Now, I did hear that he did accept, I believe it was $12 million from the UK, but I'm not sure if that's actually true.
Why would the president of Brazil refuse aid to stop these horrible wildfires?
Well, it may show that he did not have the ability or the desire to address the issue as quickly as possible.
Explain to me, like, what – and you've seen the Amazon.
I have.
I've never been to Brazil. Yeah. And I have seen some pictures, and it's just hard to convey from film.
Yep.
But what is the scope of what is going on right now in the Amazon with the fires?
Well, the fires are so so massive that they are...
They're larger than some American states.
Oh, it's amazing. It almost looks like something from a sci-fi movie that is currently going on. And because of the enormity of it, that, again, is a reason that he brought all of the military in to help with the fight, along with others. You know, there
I know how hard it is to put out some California wildfires.
Oh, yes.
You know, and they're in a relatively small area of the country, and we have helicopters bringing in water and everything. How big are the Amazon fires?
Well, so some of them are miles and miles and miles. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, to the nth degree that, you know, said Fire one is 120 miles across.
But you said there's 70,000 fires.
No, there's more than that. There, as of last count, there was 75,000. I saw a number this morning that I have not verified yet that says that there are 80,000 fires.
80,000 separate fires.
Separate, yes.
I mean, I don't know how you drop 80,000 matches in a forest and not make the whole thing go up in flames.
Well, you have to remember now, we're talking about...
It's a very large area.
Yes.
But still, 80,000 fires.
Yep.
I mean, again, the California fires, as terrible as they were, you're talking about 6 or 7 maybe at one time.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, folks have been putting some out, and then the problem is that I believe as of yesterday or day before yesterday, that the president asked for a 60-day stop of any of these clear cutting and these small fires that people will start, so that they could get their hands around.
Just 60 days.
60 days.
He's like, hey, guys, please don't start any new fires for 60 days.
Well, I hear you.
Like just, hey, don't start fires and there'll be criminal penalties if you do.
Right.
But hey, you know, with 80,000 fires, maybe we shouldn't have any new ones. It seems small stuff. Now, in terms of the climate,
yes.
What do these fires do?
They are going to push more carbon pollution into the atmosphere. That is going to warm up the planet.
Even faster.
And that's the scary thing that folks don't get. When you look at the IPCC report, that international report that came out, that talked about over the next couple of decades, what is going to happen if we don't stop all of this fossil fuel pollution and other pollution that's going into the atmosphere, if we don't stop the deforestation or slow it down, our agricultural practices, the National Climate Assessment that's focused on our country, you know, all these great scientists coming together, pulling together all these studies to talk about, you know, how much more intense the hurricanes will be, the wildfires, the drought, so forth and so on.
So it's going to dramatically increase global warming.
Yes.
We're going to lose our great oxygen source.
We are.
And that means more carbon dioxide in the air.
Yes.
Which means more pollution, more carbon pollution, because that's what carbon dioxide is,
which
causes even faster global warming.
Yes.
Are people going to be struggling to breathe? I mean, what does it mean?
People in São Paulo are now having difficulty. Children are actually being impacted from the smoke.
If you've got asthma.
Without a doubt. And in our country, 25 million people have asthma, 7 million kids. And that is where we are right now. So imagine as we have more and more.
So we're losing oxygen.
Yes.
We're increasing global warming.
Yes.
The president is, hey, guys, hey, no more fires for 60 days. He's taking minimal steps.
Yep.
Are the people in Brazil rising up and saying, Bolsonaro, we didn't expect this when we elected you?
Many are. So there was recently an indigenous march. Indigenous women came to Brasilia and actually
the capital,
to speak out. And many young people are now getting engaged also. So people
When's
are
the
paying
next
attention.
Election?
The next election is not for a few years.
How does Brazil work? Is it a parliamentary system or a presidential system?
It's a presidential
system.
Term
of years.
Yes.
So 4 years,
yep.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be there a while.
Yeah.
I know that the G7, maybe I should call it the G6.
Yeah.
The G7 folks are sort of the most important nations of the world. You know, the United States, UK, France, Japan, Germany, countries like that. Mm-hmm. One country is not really playing well with the others, and it's ours. It won't surprise you to know that Donald Trump doesn't want to play well with others. He actually skipped the meeting on the Amazon. Is that right?
He said it was a scheduling error, that his folks had scheduled him for something else so that he couldn't participate.
Maybe he had to play golf at that time.
He may have.
Maybe that was tea time. Is it fair to say that the UK and France and Germany and Japan are taking global warming and particularly the crisis of the Amazon more seriously than our president is?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, even before the president came in, he said he was going to remove himself from the Paris Climate Agreement.
Right.
Those were the basics, you know, of doing what was necessary to help to, you know, slow down these impacts that are coming. So if he wasn't even willing to do the basics. Now, of course, that won't completely kick in until 2020, after the election, a few weeks after that. But the president is really putting our country at a huge disadvantage in a couple of ways. One, leadership. Folks around the planet watch what we do. We've always had the strongest environmental laws you know, of any major country in the world. And the president has weakened that. Some folks will say through deregulation, but it's deeper than deregulation. Every set of administrations.
Well, when you put someone in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency that wants to despoil the environment,
yeah,
it makes it really hard for the EPA to do its job.
Well, that's why I resigned when Scott Pruitt was there.
Well, good for you. That's why you should have. We got to take one more break. We'll be back with Dr. Ali, and we'll have some time to take your calls at 888-488-6275 or 888-653-7543. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levin, talking with Dr. Ali, Vice President of the National Wildlife Federation. Dr. Ali, you've given us a lot of depressing news today. We've talked about just the dangers of climate change, global warming in general. We've talked about the Amazon fires out of control, a president down there who's not listening, a president up here who's not listening. It's all kind of depressing. And while I don't want to sugarcoat anything, what can we do? What can someone listening to this podcast, to this radio, what can the ordinary person do to try to protect our planet?
There are lots of things that you can do and that are going on. So one of them, just going back to Brazil, if folks go to zerodeforestationcattle.org.
Z-E-R-O.
Z-E-R-O.
D-D-E. Mm-hmm. Forestation.
Cattle.
C-A-T-T-L-E.
That's correct. .org.
Zerodeforestationcattle.org. That's a mouthful. All right.
So that's a great place to support those who are doing sustainable business practices, sustainable agricultural practices. NWF has been working with a number of different partners in that space. The other thing we can do is make sure that you're also partnering with those organizations that are focused on addressing deforestation across the planet. That's the global stuff. But, you know, here in our country, there are a huge amount of young people who are getting engaged. You have the climate strike that's coming up here in a couple of weeks. Lots of folks are also thinking about...
Tell us about the climate strike.
So climate strike started with a number of young people who actually were not going to school on one day to bring attention to climate change issues. Young people were saying that, you know, they were not a part of causing these problems, but if leaders in the political realm and others were not willing to stand up and do the right things, then they would bring attention to the issues.
Okay, well, I hope they're not staying home. I hope they're actually working to help the planet.
Oh, and they're not staying home. No, many of these, there are literally millions of young people across the planet who are getting engaged. You know, you have everybody from This Is Zero Hour to the Sunrise Movement to the Extinction Movement. All across the planet.
And listen, I wouldn't be a Virginia State delegate if I didn't put a plug in for Virginia elections, which are occurring in just 2 months. Virginia, of course, being the only state that can flip from Republicans to Democrats. Mm-hmm. You should know, if your issue is climate change, that we in the House Democratic Caucus, Senate Democratic Caucus, have tried time and time again to do a carbon tax, to get us into REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, to try to put require our utilities like Dominion to do all kinds of things like solar and wind, and we're really pushing for that renewable energy, and the Republicans have largely shut us down. So if your issue is climate change and you live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, please make sure you get out and vote in just 2 months. Don't skip the 2019 election. And then if you live outside Virginia, well, 2020, we could have a president who cares about climate change. We could have a Congress who cares about climate change. If that's your issue, you know, there's a party that maybe imperfectly, maybe with fits and starts, is trying to deal with it. And then there's a party that basically denies it's even a problem. I don't know how you can, Dr. Ali, I don't know how you can see the Arctic ice mass melting and say, I don't know how you can purposely lie to yourself like that. But I assume that a lot of the deniers are paid for by the businesses that profit from this.
They are. You know, a lot of it is being pushed by the fossil fuel industry and the money that they put behind candidates. To push an agenda But I have often said, and many of the civil rights leaders who helped raise me and others have often said, that the power of people will always be greater than the power of money.
Well, I certainly hope so. Dr. Ali, I really appreciate your coming here on the Inside Scoop. Mm-hmm. Join us today.
Yes, sir.
And take action, folks. We only have one planet, and it's your chance to do something about it. This is Mark Levine, signing off.